to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Defence on FMX, brought to you by My Sports Day, Youth Energy and Save Association. I'm your host, Stel, and we have a packed show tonight. We'll be discussing Spurs versus Chelsea, Arsenal's defeat at Stoke, Man United's annihilation of Swansea, red card controversy, and much, much more. Unfortunately, we won't be discussing the doping, or should I say banned substance story that broke earlier, but you know, once there's more information, we'll touch on it at some point in the future. While we're on the subject of dopes, how are you doing?
Thanks for that. Yeah,
so you like that one,
Started already.
Yeah, you good?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah.
You've got the hat.
I know.
You've got the T-shirt. Have you been playing five a side or something?
No, I haven't. No. Okay. Next week, hopefully.
Next week. Yeah. Wonderful. Right. So this is Jan, as you guys are probably aware by now, and joining us tonight is none other than Mr. Rodri Giggs. Hey, Ding Rod.
Yeah, all right, fellas. You forgot. He's got the hat. He's got the T-shirt, and he's got the pillow today.
Yes, he's sitting on the,
got the pillow.
Yeah, elevated.
Don't look taller, yeah?
You didn't say my bum looks big in this.
Oh, great
stuff. And our guest tonight is none other than a gentleman that really doesn't need any introduction. He's received more death threats than Sol Campbell recently. It's Lee from Bang on YouTube. How you doing, buddy?
I'm very well, thank you. I've dodged all the bullets. I've survived, and I'm here for the show. You know, I couldn't let you guys down.
Thank you very much. You're still alive like Tupac, apparently, or Elvis, or
exactly.
Whoever is. Whatever. Anyway, right, so let's begin the show at Tottenham's temporary home, Wembley, where champions Chelsea silenced their critics the best way possible with a win against their bitter rivals. Marcus Alonso was the hero for the Blues, scoring twice, with a Bashiri on goal sandwich in between. He's one of the most overrated players I've ever seen in my life. Anyway, let's not go into that one. A 2-1 win for Conte's men against a Spurs side tipped to challenge for the title has put their opening day defeat to bed, with a little teddy bear as well. Rod, mate, let's not beat about the bush. Tactically, Conte got it spot on, as you'd expect, but this was a smash-and-grab win if I've ever seen one. People say Spurs were more attack-minded, but Chelsea did what they needed to do. Big result for them, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a massive result, because they're one of the top six, so you know they're one of the teams they're going to be competing against, so a massive result, especially when arguably Tottenham were the better side. So, but saying that had a Chelsea team with the manager last week, it's just absolutely laughable. They won the league last year, so yeah, they've got problems long term, but you know, he's still a top manager and they're still the champion, so they're going to be, you know, a decent side.
Absolutely. And mate, other than Marcelo, I can't think of a better attacking left-back than Alonso at the moment. He's had an incredible 12 months, hasn't he?
He's a brilliant footballer, Alonso, for me. Especially the way Chelsea played with the wing-back. Mm-hmm. He's suited to that incredibly. He's very good defensively, and he's brilliant going forward. I think if he had a little bit more pace about him, he'd probably be the best left-back for me, or the best left wing-back, whatever way you want to put
it. In the world?
Why not? Okay. I agree with Marcelo. Marcelo is very good, but if you think about it, Alonso, he was at Sunderland, he was at Bolton, Fiorentina, hasn't really been at big clubs in his career. I know he started at Real Madrid, but you know, he came as a kind of not unknown, but yeah, people knew him. But for what he's done at Chelsea, you know, in a very short space of time, I think he's a wonderful footballer.
Well, didn't they say that his dad and his granddad represented Spain?
Yeah, he's been uncapped by Spain, hasn't he?
Right.
Which is, I think they'll call him up soon.
Well, yeah, look, they've got Jordi Alba and the fella at Arsenal. I don't know his name. Places. But yeah. Anyway. Well, just look, many eyebrows were raised when Chelsea's team sheet was announced. Another untried lineup, including a new three-man central defensive combination, plus David Luiz in midfield with Kante and Bakayoko, who's making his debut. Conte has been praised for getting it right tactically, but like we said last week, there's a strong team spirit at the club, a siege mentality, if you will. Something drummed into their heads, obviously, by Conte. What can you say about that, man? Lee, let's start with you, mate.
I love Conte. I think he's a fantastic manager. what he done at Juventus was nothing short of spectacular. And I think that, I mean, I've got a lot of Chelsea fans on Twitter, a hell of a lot of Chelsea fans follow me on Twitter, and they're all downbeat about this season. I just don't buy into that. You know, they're going on like they need a whole new squad. And if you actually look at their squad on paper, it's actually up there, and hence why they're champions. I mean, obviously, add into that the fact they have got a top draw manager that gets it. He is a modern day football manager. He gets what it means to the fans. He won't have any players shirk their responsibilities going forward or backwards defensively. I think that I wouldn't say he's the best manager in the league, because I don't think he is, but he's in that elite bracket for me of Premier League managers. But when you actually analyse Chelsea's team, and I think all the Chelsea fans that are going nuts this season, like, I just don't get it. I'd love to be in their position, mate. I really would. Do you know what I mean? And you know, they've spent £145 million this summer. Obviously, take into account their outs as well, that it's not a great deal that they've spent in comparison to years gone by. But they've still spent £145 million. They've added in three quality areas, and they're going to be up there. And I've still tipped them to win the title again this season. So, you know, come back and haunt me in May if I'm well off the mark and they don't. Because the way their fans are going on at the minute, or a lot of their fans are going on at the minute, it's like they're going to finish outside the top four and they need to spend another £200 million. But I don't get it. Like I said, he is a brilliant manager, mate. He is top class. And like I say, I'd have him at Arsenal all day long.
There you go. Rod, is Conte more than just a passion merchant, as some people would call him?
No, like Lee said, he's proven that he'd be a top manager, what he did at Juventus, and now he's come to England and he's won the Premiership. So, you know, like Lee said, he's one of them. He's not the best, but he's a top elite manager, and, you know, like Lee says, they've got a good squad still, but they've still got rid of two key massive players, and John Terry in the change room is a massive, massive person in that change room. So, you know, they'll be there and thereabouts, but I don't see them winning it, not at all.
That's a fair point. What do you think? Because, as I said, they've tried a brand new back three that they've never used before. Mm. It worked.
Yeah.
They obviously used David Luiz to protect them. It went down a tree. And let's be 100% honest, as the guy said, they're league champions.
Yep.
You cannot rule them out at all.
No, you can't. For me, what was more impressive was the key players they had missing on front. Cahill, Fabregas suspended, Costa not there, Hazard injured. So the fact that they went there, you know, like Christensen, Rudiger, unproven in the Premiership against, you know, arguably for me, the best striker in the Premiership in Harry Kane. To go there and get a result, it just proves tactically he's one of the best managers in the Premiership for me. I think he's up there with Mourinho. He, you know, just as good for me personally. He's got the Italian mentality though, hasn't he? You know, let's defend first of all, and then if we can make goals, we're not going to concede them at the other end, and we're going to get results. And Chelsea proved that last season. And let's face it, let's be honest, the defeat last week, if it wasn't for the, you know, the red cards, Burnley wouldn't have beaten Chelsea. So they showed resilience as well, Chelsea. They showed bottle. They showed that they play for the manager. They play for the club. You know, it's easy. You know, once you lose the first game of the season and everyone's kind of against you, you know, heads down. But it looks like a man motivator to me. You know, he looks like, you know, he's passionate and he reflects on his players.
Yeah.
So you can't write Chelsea off. I personally don't think they'll win it, but you can't write Chelsea off.
No, of course not. I think it's been, as I said before, with the whole siege mentality thing. I think those two red cards, he's kind of used it. Turned it into from a negative into a positive, yeah. And used it and said, right, everyone's against us now. Mm. We're the league champions. Everyone's on our tail.
Everyone wants to beat us this season.
And listen, if you're a footballer that's won league titles and can't get motivated by the thought of winning it again, then you're in the wrong game.
Absolutely.
In the wrong game. Right. Lee, two seasons ago, Spurs drew at home against West Brom, which meant Leicester had one hand on the title. Then in May, a 1-0 loss in Stratford, of all places, ultimately handed Chelsea the league. Now, as an Arsenal fan, I can't expect you to keep faith on Spurs, but what is it about them that they constantly shoot themselves in the foot?
that's a brilliant question, to be fair. I think if if Spurs knew that, they probably would have won the title in the last couple of years. To me, I think it's a mental thing. I think it's in their heads. A little bit along the lines of when Arsenal play Chelsea, we've mentally, in our heads, lost the game before we start. And I think Tottenham have a similar sort of problem as to when the going is on and it gets tough and it's the running, especially the last two seasons, as we said. But when they're getting down that final straight, in the back of their head, they're thinking, we can't do it. We can't do it. And the pressure kills them. I think ultimately that's what it is. The pressure gets to them. And 9 times out of 10, they will bottle it. It's ironic that when they played West Ham a few years ago, that it all came undone. Because, I mean, if you look at if they played West Ham tomorrow, they'd beat West Ham. Yeah, when they played Chelsea a few seasons ago and Hazard turned up and done his business, the only time he did turn up that season. Yeah, you know, we see it at the weekend, they're not a million miles apart in difference from players on the pitch and performances. And yes, the league table showed different, but at the end of the day, Tottenham have got a quality first 11. But it's all mental with them. It's all in their head. I mean, at the end of the day, they've got a manager that's never been there and done it. He's never gone the full distance and won a league title. They've got players that have never won a league title in England. So, you know, people don't underestimate how hard it is to win this league. And, you know, the pressure of being up there all season and then just drifting away. I look here and I see with Tottenham similarities to Arsenal prior to when we beat Hull City in the cup final. We were the nearly team. We were nearly good. We would nearly win something and then we'd just fall away at the end. Yeah, then we broke that hoodoo and we went and won the FA Cup against Hull, albeit we were 2-0 down and nearly threw it away. But Tottenham are that team at the minute. They're the nearly team. They're nearly good. Yeah, they just need, in my opinion, I think that they need a couple of proven Premier League winners in their team. Maybe not starting 11, but somebody around the dressing room, like we just spoke about John Terry leaving a minute ago. Somebody like John Terry, I know he was never going to go there, but somebody of that ilk that can get in there and just keep everyone calm when the pressure's on. And I could see that they, I know this pains me to say it and it's on record as well, but if they had somebody of that mould in the last couple of years, they would have won it once out of them 2 years. But ultimately, if they don't go on and win it in the next 2 years, I think their team would be ripped apart.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't agree with you more, mate. I mean, what you said before about their mentality, you're right. You have to question their mentality, especially in key games and at vital stages of the season. And I've got a question, not just the manager, but the senior players that are there. If you look at Vertonghen, if you look at Hugo Lloris, the mistake that he made.
That's awful.
You know, okay, fair enough. When goalkeepers make mistakes, naturally they're going to get criticised because obviously it ultimately leads to a goal. But this isn't the first time that Hugo Lloris has dropped a clanger in a big game. We saw it in the Euros in the final. He should have been saving that shot.
He qualifies against Sweden in last second
That's
of the game.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So he's got previous, so to speak. And, you know, there's a whole thing about Spurs and, you know, the whole mentality thing, which again, I agree. But I think we should take this discussion and use it as a segue into our first bite back section of the show, which we put the question out to our Twitter followers and Facebook group members. And it is, of course, relating to Tottenham's Wembley hoodoo. Now, we basically asked everyone, is talk about Spurs being unable to play at Wembley premature? Now, what do you think?
Yes, I think so.
That's just your answer.
That's just
Would you like to elaborate? And we've only been
any other team on Sunday, Tottenham would have got a result for me. If Lloris does his job properly, Tottenham don't get beat on Sunday. And Tottenham were the better team, in my opinion. Probably the first half an hour, Chelsea were the better team. But after that, I thought Tottenham took over. Tottenham take their chances as a different game. It's only one game. And he proved to me on Sunday that Tottenham can play at Wembley. My criticism of Tottenham is their squad. I don't think their strength and depth is there. They're, like Lee was saying, I think they're 2-3 good players away. Like Kane, for instance. Janssen's not going to come in and score goals. We know that. You know, for me, I don't think he's a Tottenham player. I don't even think he's a Premiership player, you know, in my opinion. Son's hot and cold. Sissoko's coming up. He's not scored a goal for Tottenham. is coming on to try and save a game. That's where, for me, it lies. Their first 11 is brilliant on paper, and the way that they play, they're good. But their squad is what lets Tottenham down, in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
Rod, what do you think? Is Wembley this, I don't know, this jinx stadium for them?
Like Jan said, they played well, but history tells you it's a hindrance more than a help. So, but it's difficult to say, but it's not good. They'd rather be at White Lane than Wembley. It's not going to be easy for him. So, I just find with Tottenham, if it did get over the line or they did win the league, then they'd probably go on and win a couple more. But it's just getting over that voodoo of winning it. And like Lee says, they're just a bottle job. When Leicester won the league, that was their chance to win it. And they, you know, Leicester get too far away from them. But that was their chance. And then after they won that, they might have had the confidence to go on and win more. But, you know, the squad's a bit light. And without the starting 11, it starts to get lesser quality. So yeah, it's going to be difficult for him. But I don't think you can say it's a voodoo for him at the minute, because it's only been one game and they played well. It was Chelsea, and you know Conte he's no mug, and not Chelsea no mug. So, and you've seen Chelsea do this time and time again. So it was a poor result, but you know they did play well. So they've got to take confidence in that.
That's right. And friends in the Facebook group page, Mike, he says, yes, that's just his answer, yes. Mike just doesn't win. That's fine. Nikki says, most definitely they've played the league champions too, which obviously you need to take into consideration. James May says, yes, once the voodoo is broken, expect the same as White Hart Lane. Well, they didn't lose a game last season, did they, at White Hart Lane? Pascal Jimbonda, the voice of reason, says, if they can give a few fodder teams a hiding, they should be fine. It seems a mental block rather than actual performance to me, as I thought they played well in between the boxes. But when it mattered, they got tetchy. There you go. He's a better analyst than I am. We should have him on the show. Listen, this is what I say. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about the size of the pitch. To be honest, I'm actually not having that. I mean, these are players who have played on many different surfaces. Rod has played on the Stokes pitch, like he told me the other day. He said it wasn't great. Let's be honest, as you said, Spurs played well enough to win on Sunday. I mean, if it was against Brighton, I doubt we'd be having this conversation. Exactly. But let me put a few points across to you guys, and you can argue with me as much as you like, or even our listeners can argue. Dele Alli, Harry Kane, Eric Dier, they're all regulars for the national team who play at
Wembley.
Right, okay. Hugo Lloris plays for France, and they play at the national stadium, right?
Yep.
So it's not as if they're not used to this pitch. We know that Spurs play very narrow anyway.
Yep.
So they rely mostly on the fullbacks to get forward. So, if anything, the width is going to help them. Am I wrong here?
Sort of.
Listen.
Yes and no, because that could also be their downfall. It might help them going forward. They might be able to get more width, like you say, which therefore means they've got more space for their midfield runners to get into, which means Dele Alli and Eriksen will be scoring more goals. But it's also going to be their downfall defensively, because there's going to be bigger gaps because teams will be doing the same to them. In my opinion, just coming back to the whole Spurs-Wembley thing, for them to have gone all season unbeaten at White Hart Lane last season was a good achievement for Spurs. Massive achievement. For them to go anywhere near that this season was always going to be difficult. But that being said, I don't think it's going to be a massive problem for them. And I'll tell you for why. Last season, they played at Wembley in the Champions League and then the Europa League when they got knocked out of the Champions League. They were playing the odd game here and there at Wembley. This season, every other weekend, they know they're at Wembley and there's 70-odd thousand Spurs fans in there. Obviously, adding the away fans and all the empty seats that they haven't been selling. But at the same time, that's now home. Do you see where I'm trying to come from? Instead of it just being an away match, which is pretty much what it was last season in the Champions League and Europa League, I know somebody that's been to that stadium and it's all decked out, everything's Spurs there. You don't even know England play there. Yeah, there's nothing of England in there. It is literally all Spurs. So you know, add the fact that more Spurs fans are going to be able to go and see their team play in the weekend, which should create a better atmosphere. Unless, of course, they're absolutely getting spanked by someone, which I can't really see. They don't really get spanked, do they, anymore? But I think it's not going to be White Hart Lane, let's put it that way. But at the same time, all these memes that are going around and all these jokes about they can't win at Wembley, they're going to win at Wembley, and they're going to spank some teams at Wembley this season because they are a good team. They were the better team against Chelsea on Sunday. The difference is Chelsea are more ruthless in front of goal, and they have been for the last two seasons, or last season and the start of this season. I know they cocked up against Burnley, but they've got, in my opinion, they've got more goal threat, Chelsea, all over the pitch than Tottenham have. Tottenham, you take Kane and Ali out of the team, where are their goals coming from? You know, like you said, Janssen ain't going to chip in with 20 goals if Kane gets injured, is he? Dele Alli scored 15, 20 goals last season, whatever it was. You take him out of the team, he's a massive loss for him. Same with Eriksen. Them three players, if any one of them get a long-term injury, and people can shout that Kane was out for 3 months last season, you know, their midfielders were still chipping in at that point. If you get two of them injured, where are their goals coming from? And that's the only thing I'd say. But on Wembley itself, I don't see it being a massive issue for Spurs. I hope it is, because obviously I don't want them to finish above us. But I can't see it being this massive issue that people are making it out to be.
One more thing I want to add is the opposition that Tottenham will play at Wembley this season. Your West Broms, your Burnleys, your Stokes. Teams that don't get to Wembley, it's an opportunity for them to play at Wembley, which could make it more difficult for Tottenham because they might raise their game.
Yeah, but I'm going to flip this. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to park the bus at Wembley.
True.
They're not.
No.
They're not going to be able to do that.
You give an extra 5-10% as a professional, as in, oh, look where I am. Oh, this is good. I'm going to not play here again. Yeah. So they raise their game.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I was at Stoke at the weekend for the Arsenal game. Stoke's pitch is tiny.
Yep.
It's so tiny. And when they put them 8 men behind the ball, or 9 men at some point, there's no way you're breaking them down. If they do that at Wembley, you'll still find a way through at some point. I mean, some of the balls we were playing at the weekend, if that was at Wembley, it would have been a 5-6 yard gap between centre-backs instead of a 2-3 yard gap. That makes a lot of difference. So, yeah, I'll see both of your points there, to be fair. See both. They're going to raise their games to see the lesser teams without any disrespect to them. But at the same time, they're not going to be able to park the bus.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to wrap this little section up with just one final thing. White Hart Lane, the dimensions are 100 metres by 67. Wembley is 105 by 69. So not a massive difference.
No.
But after a 2-1 loss against Newcastle in October 2014, Pochettino said, and I quote, "Our style means we need a bigger place to play because we play a positional game, and it's true that White Hart Lane is a little bit tight."
So he's got what he wants now at Wembley, hasn't he? Yeah. It's a long season, still early.
As he said, no lo sé. Right, so, right, look, if Spurs fans feel aggrieved, then I can't think of a word to describe how the North London brethren are feeling these days. After an exciting opening day win, a 1-0 defeat at a cold, windy Stoke brought Arsenal fans down to earth with a bit of a bump, apart from Lee, because Lee's a realist. Fortunately, our guest has no filter and is quite vociferous about his side's current plight. Lee, the floor is yours, sir. You were at the Stoke game. Can you pinpoint exactly where it went wrong?
Starting 11. Starting 11. You've got, you know, people band about this World Cup winner. Oh, he's a World Cup winner when they talk about Mesut Ozil. But we actually had another World Cup winner in Per Mertesacker sat on the bench with a little graze on his eye, which was why he missed the Leicester game. Apparently that was due to medical decisions, so can't knock that one. But if he's fit and he's fit enough to sit on a bench, he's fit enough to start the game. Because in my opinion, if one of your players goes down in the first minute, he's got to be ready to come on. So he should have started. Rob Holding, another centre-back, sat in the stands for that game in a suit, watching the game. I can kind of see why Wenger dropped him, because Jamie Vardy absolutely ruined him in the Leicester game. So I can sort of see why he didn't start. But then that brings me on to Callum Chambers. Where is this kid? I don't personally rate him. I don't think he's that good. But he's a natural centre-back. Nacho Monreal and Saïd Kolasinac aren't centre-backs. And then when you factor in the fact that Mustafi was coming back for his first game of the season after his last game was the Confederations Cup final, you know, it's not a great back three. Moving on into midfield, I thought that there wasn't much creativity, and I don't put that down so much to the midfield. I put that down more to the strikers. Stoke parked the bus, as we spoke about. You know, that's what they do against us. That's why they've beaten us, I think, 7 times out of the last 9 away at their grounds. It's something ridiculous. It's a ridiculous stat. And the one time, ironically, that we beat them, they were on the beach, which was a couple of months ago at the back end of the season. They had nothing else to play for. So, yeah, I mean, I've watched that game closely. I watched our strikers. Lacazette's goal, I'm still not convinced that was offside. But I'm not going to use that as an excuse as to why we lost. We just weren't good enough. We played into Stoke's hands the whole game. Stop, start, stop, start, stop, start. That's what they want. We played Bellerin at left back. Well, he's barely any good at right back, let alone left back. I'm sorry, but he's just not good enough for Arsenal Football Club. His pace saves him. He's not very good at defending. He can't cross to save his life. And he's always out of position and then uses his speed to recover. And then everyone goes, "Wow, what a tackle." Well, it weren't. You were out of position in the first place. They targeted Bellerin so much in that game as well. Butland was aiming his goal kicks straight to Bellerin. Every single time. He'd done it 10 or 11 times in that second half. And I was sitting there going, "Yeah, look, here's another one. He's aiming straight at Bellerin." You'd think a manager sitting on the bench would have noticed that and maybe gone, "Do you know what? Let's drag Xhaka over to that side when he's taking goal kicks or something. A little bit of height, a little bit of physicality." But no, we carried on letting them do what they were doing. Danny Welbeck, just, wow, we've been mugged off with him. Like, we have, I'm sorry, but we have been absolutely mugged off with Danny Welbeck. I said it the day we signed him, I don't think he's ever going to be good enough. He's got every attribute to be good. He's strong, he's physical, he can hold the ball up, he can run in behind. Then he gets in the penalty box and it's like, what do I do? Yeah, and you see it again against Stoke. He's tripping over. Even his goal against Leicester, he nearly fell over. I mean, Arsenal are the most frustrating team to watch. And maybe that's because I'm an Arsenal fan that I say that. Mm. But I look at them and I think, like, you're so close to being decent. And if you just played right players in their right positions and actually had a game plan. Because, I mean, like, we threw Giroud on, for example, in the 65th minute, I think it was. And we didn't put a cross into the box until stoppage time. And it's like, why have you brought this guy on who's notorious for coming off the bench, scoring headers, and you don't put a ball into the box until stoppage time? 92nd minute, I think, was the first time we crossed a ball into him. And it was literally, we're 1-0 down, away to Stoke, and it is literally just Giroud in the box. 94th minute, we've done it again, and he missed a great opportunity, but he was again the only man in the box. Wenger's substitutions baffled the life out of me. He takes off Kolasinac, who's a natural left winger, left back, and he keeps on a right back still playing at left back. And in my opinion, he done that to say, well, I've played him there now. If I take him off, that makes me look a fool. So I'm not going to do that because I want to prove my point and I'll keep him on. In my opinion, I was sat there at half-time and at half-time I said, bring Mertesacker on, shift Monreal over to left centre-back, shift Kolasinac to left wing-back, yeah, and then take Bellerin off. That's what he should have done, in my opinion. Instead, in the second half, he took Kolasinac off and then I see him put up Theo Walcott coming on for our £50 million striker. And it's like, you know, you know you're banging trouble when you're bringing Theo Walcott on to save the day. You know, especially when you've spent 50 million quid on a striker who literally had one chance in that game, scored it. Offside or not is irrelevant. In my opinion, Walcott shouldn't be anywhere near Arsenal Football Club. I could probably list about 15 or 20 players I think that about made, to be honest. But we haven't got all night. And yeah, like I say, there's a lot of reasons why we didn't win that game at the weekend. But I'm fearful for this Sunday, because if we go into the Anfield game up at Liverpool with the same starting 11 and the same tactics or lack of tactics and the same lack of movement, we're banging trouble. We were banging trouble. So yeah.
Well, Lee, your comments have opened a can of worms on the chat. You've got people saying the same old four-letter word I can't use. The old man is a fraud and couldn't motivate a... I can't read these out. we had no discipline. Tactics were dead. Worst signing of the summer was Wenger. He got a pay rise. Depressing as hell.
Agreed.
Really?
Can I add something?
Go on. Again? Add.
The big decisions went against Arsenal, I thought, as well.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
You know,
100%.
Could have had a couple of penalties easily. Lacazette's not offside for me. So, yes, you can, you know.
Are we shocked that Andre Mariner got decisions wrong when he can't even make out who Oxlade-Chamberlain is?
He's got a point there.
Rod, what do you make of the whole Arsenal debacle? I mean, we've heard your comments about them in the past. Obviously, they haven't changed, but do you agree with Lee?
Yeah, totally. They're just to us now as a Manchester United fan, they are they're just a non-threat.
So, yeah, I agree, mate.
As an Arsenal fan, that must be... It must drive them mad with all the money they're spending and they've given the manager 2 more years. You know, it just must be frustrating for him because, like you say, they've got Walcott, they've got Ramsey, they've got so many Ozil, there's so many weak players that are just get run over season after season. They're just weak minded, especially Ozil. He would drive me crazy.
Oh, mate, don't get me started on him.
Please get started on him. This will be good.
I just feel like
we need the views.
Don't you think? I just think Arsenal have become a laughing stock over the years. It's like, you know, they'll play pretty football and then come January, February, the wheels come off. It's like we all know it.
The thing is, we don't even play pretty football anymore. That's a myth now. Them days of pretty football were dead from 2008 onwards, mate. Yeah, we'll have the odd couple of games where we blitz teams and, well, we don't even blitz teams anymore, but since 2008, you know, when we should have won the league that season, we should have won it that season and bottled it. But, you know, we have, in a way, become a laughing stock because everyone else in world football can see what Arsenal need, apart from the one man who's in charge of buying what we need. And it is just so frustrating. I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine earlier and he was saying to me, he actually sent me the starting 11 of the Invincibles. Then he sent me, this is exactly what he did. He then sent me Man United's starting 11 against Swansea at the weekend. And he said, what's the comparison? And I said to him, they're all big, they're all strong, they're all physical, and they can all chip in with goals. Yeah, I said, that's exactly what we had when we were invincible. Then he sent me the starting 11 for Arsenal Stoke at the weekend. He goes, now tell me the difference. It's there. We've shied away from... This league's the most physical league in the world, so why do Arsenal persist with midgets and with less physical players? You know, the teams that win the league are the most physical. They're the ones that score the most goals. They're normally the ones that concede the less goals. And we haven't got any of that. You know, we concede a lot of goals, we don't score the most goals, and we're not physical. So it's no coincidence to me, or no surprise to me, that we don't challenge for a title. Because the key ingredients on winning a title, we ain't got any of them.
Mm. I agree.
You seem to have a lot of players as well that spend the 2 or 3 months a season on the injury table, treatment table.
That's the thing.
Walcott's constantly injured. Welbeck's constantly injured.
Yeah,
Wilshere.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing as well. I mean, we've got a lot of players in this squad that, in my opinion, shouldn't even be at our club. I mean, every fan says that about their own team and their own players, that they'll have a handful maybe. For me, it's over half of our squad. You know, would Theo Walcott walk into another top 4 team or a top 6 team? I don't think he would. Aaron Ramsey is a different scenario. Aaron Ramsey, for me, is not as bad as everyone makes him out to be. But at the same time, he's not being, he hasn't done anything in the last couple of seasons to be starting in that team, regardless of performances.
But Lee, is it a bit unfair to heap it on Ramsey? Because I see it on Twitter, so many people blasting the guy. But let's be 100% honest. I know that he had that one decent season, but he isn't the biggest worry, is he? Isn't the biggest concern?
No, of course,
you're looking at that squad, as you said, you know, you've got left backs playing at central defence. I mean, to be honest, Ramsey, is you might say he's been consistently bad, but he's actually been the most consistent player you've had over the past four seasons.
In my opinion, right, this is, people are going to slate me in the chat for this, but this is how I see it, right? In 10, 15, 20 years' time, when we all look back at Arsenal and look at the great FA Cup runs we've had, Aaron Ramsey will be remembered as an Arsenal legend. Yeah, now that chat's about to explode, but it's true. He scored two winning goals in FA Cup finals. Yeah, and one of them was against Chelsea, who won 30 games in the league last season. Yeah, they were no mugs last season, and he scored the winning goal in that cup final. Yeah, so when you look back at it in another generation down the road, Aaron Ramsey is essentially an Arsenal legend. The reality of it is, he's not good enough, especially playing the role he's playing. But this is a massive issue with Arsene Wenger, and has been for many years, that he will play players out of position and persist playing them out of position to prove his point. In my opinion, Aaron Ramsey's a number 10. And if you played him at number 10, in my opinion, again, I think he'd do better than Mesut Ozil. And people will throw pie charts at you and throw assist stats and created chances stats at you. I think Ramsey would produce more because I think he'd score more than Ozil does playing in that position. Yeah, he scores a decent return of goals now and he plays deeper. But then, like you said, there is a lot of Arsenal players, mate. Seriously, this could go on for 3 hours of me chatting about players that could leave, seriously.
Well, look, you mentioned winning the league earlier, and we put a question out to our listeners again, because we never really do two bite-backs, and we basically asked, which positions do you think Arsenal need to strengthen to mount the title challenge? And people laughed. They say, at Capital Gooner says the managerial position would be a good start. Expat Gooner says the board of directors, thoughts of a mad, a quick... destructive technical midfielder, vocal, antagonising, intelligent centre-back. Don Moraes says centre-back, defensive midfielder, right wing, which we won't get because Arsene Wenger still has got two. So but everyone's blaming the board and Wenger. So I guess the moral of the story is you have to wait another 2 years to do anything decent.
Well, in 2 years' time, there'll be no who, it'll be who's available again and he'll sign another one.
Fair enough. You know, you'll be too far behind. I think that's the main worry, Lee. You guys being too far behind in 2 years.
Exactly. Well, see, that's what... I look at it now and I see that, yes, Everton have gone out and spent a lot of money, but they got a lot of money for Lukaku. But they've got an ambitious owner there now. Funny enough, he was at Arsenal. He was a shareholder at Arsenal. Yeah? He's now gone into Everton and he's going, do you know what? I don't want us to be seventh or eighth or ninth. I actually want to break into that top bracket. And he's trying to do what's required. They've got a brilliant manager, mate. I could sit and talk about Koeman for days. I think he is a top draw manager. You know, I would have taken him at Arsenal all day long over Arsene Wenger, and I still would now. Everton are going to be up there in the next couple of seasons. Yes, they've bought Wayne Rooney or been given him, however the deal worked. I'm not too sure on that. Whether you're funding his wages or not, I'm not sure. But let's have it right. Wayne Rooney's got a point to prove. So Wayne Rooney's going to have a very good season this season. And if we don't fix our ideas up at Arsenal, they're going to be on our tails. So, you know, I can, if we don't do what's required in the next week or so in the transfer window, I can see us slipping even further down than last season. And that's worrying, man. It's sad. It's heartbreaking to see it.
But Lee, where do you see us finishing this season? Realistically.
As it stands right now, fifth, sixth. I hope you didn't put money on it.
Oh, crikey. Well, let's move on. And Manchester United, you don't want to talk about them, do you, Lee? They're on to another 4-0 win, while Man City were held at home by Everton. Wayne Rooney netting his 200th Premier League goal. And again, I saw Kyle Walker and Morgan Schneiderlin sent off. Another one of my favourite players. Right, yeah. Mate, KG first half from United, but they blitzed Swansea in the last 10 minutes.
Yep.
Pogba and Matic got a lot of credit, but Mkhitaryan chipped in with two more assists, adding to the two we got against West Ham. What do you make of the Armenian?
I'm a massive fan of him. I think he's a
brilliant... Oh, you're a massive fan of everything Armenian, including the Kardashians?
No.
Okay, that's all right.
Just Mkhitaryan.
We're still friends.
I think for a wide left, wide right, a number 10, and do the job that he does. I think he could chip in with a lot more goals. But don't forget, it was his first season last year. He had a lot of problems, well documented, with Mourinho and the start that he had. But Mourinho seemed to have got the best out of him. The last, well, probably 6 months, he was good at United. He started really well, 4 assists in the last 2 games. I still think he can improve on his goals tally. But he's confident. He's one of them, you know, proper elegant players. He's good left foot, right foot, can shoot, he can score, he can create. And everything United seem to do well in the attacking third goes through Mkhitaryan. I can't see Mkhitaryan and Mata playing together in the same team. I don't think it quite works when them two work in the same team or play together. But the fact that he's got that freedom to play in the number 10 role, he can go and float as such. I'm a massive fan. As for United, it wasn't as routine as the scoreline made up for me. You know, it was, like you said, it was KG. I don't think it was United's greatest performance. You know, they didn't create a lot of chances.
It was the West Ham game, let's be honest.
No, I thought the West Ham game United
was good. But we didn't blitz them.
No, we didn't blitz them.
That wasn't the 4-0
scoreline. But it was dynamic. It was quick. It was strong. Yeah. It wasn't like that. It was very KG. It was very slow. The build-up was very slow. Lukaku, as documented, only had like 25 touches of the ball, which proves that the ball wasn't up there as much for him to hold it up. It's only until United got the second goal that the game, you know, was beyond Swansea. I thought they were really shocking, Swansea, as well. I don't know if we're going to touch on Swansea.
But let's be fair on them.
You know
they were without Llorente. They had two strikers that they've never played together.
Yeah.
You know, it was a new system. I think that is... Okay, Swansea, they're going to be battling relegation this season. But what do you expect from them?
A little bit better than what they put out. In my opinion...
Come on. We said it the other week.
Yeah.
When Sigurdsson goes, it's going
to
affect them.
It's going to affect them, yeah, so, I agree. So the money that they've got, they need to buy, and they need to buy well.
Yeah.
But it's a good start from United. So
Let's
hope it carries on.
Rod, Lee, it was an entertaining game for the neutrals, the Man City game, obviously, and it was overshadowed by the two yellow cards handed, the second yellow cards handed to Walker and Schneiderlin. Were they harsh, or did Bobby Madeley get them right? Rod?
I think they were both harsh, really. You know, I know it's turned into a non-contact sport, but come on. It's sometimes these referees, they just ruin the games. Even though it arguably made City play better with 10 men because they dominated everything in the second half. But they were very, very soft. Even though you could argue the Walker one, he's looked at him and he's missed the ball. And I don't know what he was doing, but it was very, very harsh. And the Schneiderlin one, as Aguero helped the referee by getting sent off, probably. But yeah, it was a harsh one. No, they were both wrong, in my opinion.
Lee?
Yeah, I agree. Both harsh. I can sort of see why the ref gave the second yellow to Walker, because he's standing right in front of the ref and he's had a look. He's looking at the man. And then he's giving him a shoulder, do you know what I mean? So I can sort of see why, but at the end of the day, come on, man. That's never warranting a second yellow. Maybe have a word with him and say, look, just booked you 2 minutes ago. What are you doing? Calm yourself down. The Schneiderlin one, no way in a million years.
Yeah.
No way in a million years. I have no idea why he gave that.
Yeah,
Aguero's got him sent off.
Yeah, see, the thing is, with the Walker one, I can kind of see where the referee... In fact, I can kind of see why the referee gave both, because if you look at the angle the referee was looking at the Walker one, you like I said, watch it again, you see the angle that he's at. And Walker, if you look at Walker's right arm, even though you don't see the whole of it, you see a little bit of a nudge, a little bit of motion.
He probably thinks there's an elbow
and he probably
there,
thinks he's had a dig in his stomach, right? And the way the kid went down, that's another one.
But Schneiderlin was naivety to me. Yeah. You're on a booking.
Exactly, you know, way that he went in, went through him. Yeah. He won the ball. Don't get me wrong, he won the ball. And for me, that's a good challenge.
Yeah, I agree.
But
again, the angle the referee's on, like you said, you can see why he gave it.
And it's sort of like, remember last week, the whole Cahill thing, where they said, you know, that it has to be brutality to be a red card. I mean, if you're looking at it in real time, it actually looks worse than what it is. Yeah. So I can see. But then again, no, you guys are right. I agree, the silly yellow cards to dish out. Anyway, right. While Bobby Madeley's decisions have been put under the microscope, his colleague Lee Mason got his spot on that same Mary's, brandishing a red card to Marco Arnautovic for an elbow. Now, Southampton's 3-2 win over the Irons heaped more pressure on Slaven Bilic. Sky Bet have him down as 7-2 as the first manager to leave. Frank De Boer is 2-1, while Benitez is 3-1. Gents, De Boer, Bilic, Benitez, who will be sacked, who will walk, and who will stay the full season? Rod?
Well, I don't think De Boer will be going anywhere. I don't think Slaven Bilic will be going anywhere. They've just spent fortune back at Slaven Bilic at West Ham, so... And they've got a couple of two or three players out, key players. So it's always a big miss when they miss Andy Carroll. So Benitez, he's probably the one that I could probably see going with Newcastle because with Mike Ashley coming out and saying what he doesn't seem like it's good times at the end of the minute, especially when it's the start of the season. You think they'd be all buzzing to get it going, and it seems to be down and all negativity that up there at the minute. So. If there's anyone I think that's going to go in the next few months, it's going to be Benitez. With the Ronald De Boer one, I think they'll give him time. He's obviously changing the way they play. So I think the decent board there seems to be like at Crystal Palace, so they'll probably give him time. But out of any of the three, I think if I was going to put my money on it, it'd be Benitez.
You?
Bilic for me.
Bilic? Really? What?
I think he's under more pressure than the other three because of the money West Ham has spent.
Okay.
The fact that they've started the season really poorly. They've got a few players missing, but so what? They've spent money. You know, fans want results. They don't care about the players missing. They want what's going on the pitch. And the fact that he was under pressure last season and they haven't started this season well as well, I think for me is the fact. I think the ball will stay. Bilic will get sacked and Benitez will resign. Mm-hmm.
Things we said at the beginning of last season, it's even though it was the beginning of Bilic's second year at the club, eventually the fans will turn, regardless if you're a fan favourite. It's happened to so many different clubs. You know, they brought in managers and, oh yeah, we love him. And all of a sudden, results don't go their way. And fans, the lotteries disappear.
Yep.
The thing is with Bilic, I think that he had a rubbish season last year. Let's be 100% honest. But he's assembled a squad good enough to take them to that next level, whatever that is. I don't think that they will sack him just yet. I think that they'll take into consideration that A, they played Man United on the first day of the season. B, they went to Southampton, who is always a difficult place to go. And C, Arnautovic got sent off. I think once he gets his players back, we're going to see a completely different West Ham. I'm not going to say they're going to be challenging anything. Don't get me wrong, but they will be hurting team this season. I think
You have to put in the mix as well that they don't play a home game now till 1 September. So all the games that they're playing away are away games. So that's got to be difficult in itself. So it's going to have a tough start. But, you know, anyone could get beat at West Ham. And was it a penalty? Was it? I seem to think it was a penalty because he seemed to nudge him in the back. So, it could not be a penalty. So
I think Lanzini's a big miss for West Ham. Yeah. He's a good little player, Lanzini. He makes him tick. And Carroll, as you know, can hold the ball. Maybe Chicharito and Carroll will be a good partnership.
I'd like to see the stats of how many chances he creates.
Lanzini.
Because he's a fantastic little footballer. Goes under the radar, doesn't he? Yeah. Lee, what do you reckon? Who's going to stay? Who's going to go? Who's going to walk?
I think De Boer will stay all season. I think they're going to struggle, but I can't see him sacking him. I think he'll see out the whole season. I think that Bilic will get sacked. We've seen West Ham sack managers before that have been doing a lot better than him. So, yeah, and he has spent a few quid as well. Arnautovic is an idiot for what he done at the weekend. And he's their record signing, am I right in saying that? He's their record.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And then he goes and gets himself sent off. So, he ain't worth the money anyway. He turns up once every 10 games. He's good when he turns up. Don't get me wrong. He's fantastic when he turns up. He always turns up against Man United and Arsenal and teams like that. Yeah. But he never turns up when you need him to turn up. He always does stupid things like getting sent off. So, I think Rafa Benitez is angling his way out of Newcastle. Mm. The board ain't giving him any money or not enough money. Yeah, he's gone and signed some lad from the Championship for 15 million quid or whatever it is. But I look at Newcastle and I just see a really good championship team. I don't see anything in their team that makes me think that they've got anything to stay up. And Benitez ain't stupid. He's managed some of the biggest clubs in the world. So he knows what they need. The fact that there's 9 days left and he's still miles away from getting any of that, I think that he done an interview the other day, I think, sort of talking about it and, oh, yeah, you know, I want to get this and, you know, it's I'm trying, but the board and this and that. He is angling for a way out of there without looking like the villain. So that when he leaves, he can say, well, I gave him all the opportunity to give me the money. My hands were tied. I was promised money when I got to the Premier League. That didn't come through. And he walks away a hero because he got him promoted. Mm. And Mike Ashley, again, is the villain. So that's I think he's playing a clever game there.
He chose his words very wisely, didn't he? Mm. Right.
Yeah, very wisely.
In other news, not to be outdone by his record-breaking club, Sergio Ramos equaled the record of red cards in La Liga, earning number 18 in Real's 3-0 demolition of Deportivo. Lee, Wenger loves a player who sees red, Xhaka being one. What would the player like Sergio Ramos bring to this current Arsenal squad?
Well, he'd be the best centre-back at the club for a start. it'd also be one of the ones that's... He'd probably be the most decorated, wouldn't he? Mm-hmm. In terms of trophies. A lot of people look at Sergio Ramos and they can't stand him. Yeah, I look at somebody like him and I just think, do you know what? I'd love to see you in the Premier League. Yeah, I'd love you at Arsenal. And can you imagine having him and Pepe together? they're just you know, that is what you need. I mean, they're red cards waiting to happen, especially Ramos. And I just think, you know, for a centre-back, the amount of goals that guy has scored is unbelievable. And not just little goals. We're talking Champions League finals. Like, you know, he's decided a lot of games or helped to decide a lot of big games. But, yeah, definitely, I'd love somebody of that mould at Arsenal. Somebody that... You could imagine him in the dressing room grabbing hold of some of Arsenal's players and pinning them up against the wall and that. Like, why did you duck out of that challenge? Why did you, Arsenal needs some of that. You said about Granit Xhaka a minute ago. If you look at the red cards he's had, I think they're quite harsh. I think they're quite harsh. The one where he got sent off against, I think it was Swansea. Or Stoke? It might have been Stoke, actually. I can't remember. But he sort of clipped the player as they were away. It was Swansea. He clipped the player as they were away on a 3-on-1. On the halfway line, he clipped him. Just a little, you ain't getting away. Just a tactical yellow. Straight red. Well, that's never a straight red card, is it? So, you know, Arsenal have got a little bit of that in midfield. But defensively, we are so weak. Obviously, we've just signed this lad, Kolasinac. If we had a massive, big, physical monster stood next to him, then that would help us massively. And somebody like Ramos would fit the bill, but he ain't ever leaving Real Madrid for us, that's for sure.
There you go. Rod, Neymar put in another superb performance for Paris Saint-Germain in their 6-2 win over Toulouse. I hate that name. But I had a few things to say about the Barcelona board. And I quote, "I'm very sad with the board at Barcelona. They're not people who should be there. Barca deserve much better and everybody knows it." UEFA Lona. Right, granted, the signings haven't been great, but Messi's contract situation is unresolved and the La Masia conveyor belt isn't what it once used to be. Is Neymar's criticism fair, mate?
Well, just to keep his mouth shut. He's moved on now. He's got a massive deal. Just keep his mouth shut and just get on with playing football. Because, you know, he started very well. So, you know, shoot, he's doing his stuff in the public eye. And I don't agree with it. You know, Barcelona clubs and, you know, they've obviously not gone things about the right way. And obviously he's not gone about it the right way. So they're all upset with each other. But, you know, airing the dirty laundry out in public, I'm not a big fan of that. So, but you should just get on with playing football because he's a good footballer.
They're suing him, innit, Barcelona?
No, 8.5 million euros.
That's right.
Let it go. He's gone. He's deal with it. He's
just got 200 million quid for it.
Yeah.
Anyway. If anything, just to put my pennies worth in, if you don't mind. If anything, he should be kissing their backsides. Mm. That's how I look at it. He is now the highest paid footballer in the world by a country mile. He's the most expensive signing. You know, that they've allowed him to go. And, you know, these footballers, they live in a bubble, mate. Seriously. You know, he's gone to a team that were founded 10 years before I was born. And he's got the cheek to stand there and mug off Barcelona, one of the greatest teams the world has ever seen. Or clubs, should I say. One of the greatest clubs. Yeah, top three club in the world. Yeah, and he's got the cheek to stand there when they've sanctioned the deal, albeit it was in his contract, that if they hit that, then he can go.
Yeah.
But he's getting paid 900 grand a week before tax. It's pathetic. And he's got the cheek to go and slag him off. He's mad, mate. He's off his head. Do you know what, right? I can't stand him. To me, this is controversial as well. To me, he's so overrated. He is so overrated. Yeah, and it's only a matter of time before somebody in that French league has enough of his rainbow flicks and sticks it on him.
Yeah, see, this is the thing. It's a honeymoon period, isn't it, at Paris Saint-Germain? He's doing well. He's getting Man of the Match awards. I saw one of these Twitter accounts. I'm not going to say which TV channel it was, but they said he should be a contender for Ballon d'Or already. I'm like, really?
What,
because he scored twice against Gangon and Toulouse.
Scored one against Gangon.
Oh, scored one. Okay, I'm sorry.
And two against Toulouse.
Let's put it in perspective. Even though Paris Saint-Germain want to pay a lot of money, you know, for French league, it's like it's up there with the Scottish league, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Look, if he really wanted to test himself, I've said this before, if he really wanted to test himself and he really wanted to be the Ballon d'Or winner, he would have gone to somewhere like City or United. Yeah, or even Chelsea. Somewhere in the Premier League.
He wouldn't last 2 minutes in England, then.
No, he wouldn't. That's why he ain't gone there. If you look at Spain, Spain is a less physical league. That's a fact. It's a slower league. It's more technical. He can stand there and do his little flicks and tricks in Spain. And it also helps that he's got Messi and Suarez playing with him. What he's then done is decided, yeah, I want to go. I want to get out of Messi's shadow, whatever the reason may be. Yeah, he's mad, in my opinion, to even leave that club. But he's then gone to a league where he knows he's going to win player of the season. Yeah, it's no test. It's the, you know, he's going to look world class every week playing against a bunch of useless idiots, you know, that are not on. There's probably a handful, maybe two handfuls of players in that league that are any good. Yeah, let's be honest.
Paris Saint-Germain and Monaco. So, yeah.
Exactly. So he's not testing himself. And I see the little clips where he's rainbow flicking over defenders' heads. And I said to my friend when I see that, I said, do you remember the World Cup back in Brazil where that centre-back went straight through the back of him and nearly broke his back?
Mm-hmm.
That will happen to him. Yeah, I hope it don't, because you don't want to wish that on a player. Yeah, but somebody is going to have enough of him taking the mick at some point, and they're going to seriously hurt him. Yeah, and, you know, right or wrong, well, it's not right at all, is it? But at the end of the day, you know, to come out with shit that he's talking is just, you know, it's wrong. Just keep your mouth shut. You've got off to a good start, as Rodri said. You scored 3 goals, a couple of assists, whatever it is, in your first 2 games. Yeah, you're already touted the best player in that country because you are. Yeah, and you're going to win everything in that country. So just keep it zipped. Yes, and justify your price tag.
Yeah. I think it all boils down to ego with him. You know, he was dubbed as the next Pelé because he obviously came from Santos, and then he went to Barcelona and won the treble. And when you've got Suarez and Messi, then let's be honest, no one's going to dethrone Messi. Messi's going to he's going to abdicate when he's ready. Do you know what I mean? And I don't think Neymar wanted to wait. The money came along with Paris Saint-Germain. He's obviously got that big thing with Brazil. You know, I think you can only buy, like Pat Nevin said the other week, you can buy a Brazil shirt in Brazil, but you can only get Neymar on the back.
Yep.
So he's got that monopoly, so to speak. So again, it's all bravado. It's all an ego. And yeah, you guys are right. He goes to Ligue 1 and he absolutely rips it to pieces. But what happens in the Champions League? Because the way I see it is that when you're playing against, I wouldn't say mediocre, but above average quality, and then you step up against the big boys, you get found out.
Yeah.
And yeah, fair enough, he did relatively well last season for Barcelona. You know, there's that comeback against PSG. Yeah. But against Juventus, when he's a defence-minded team,
where was he?
Organised, yeah. Where was he?
Yeah,
over exactly. Legs, where was he?
Exactly. And that's the thing, right? you know, you've just hit the nail on the head when you say Champions League. Yes, it is a massive step up to what he's playing in now, right? And we've seen that with PSG. There's a reason PSG haven't got to a Champions League final and won it. Yeah, because they can go and buy Mbappe as well, and this Fabinho. They can go and buy whoever they want. At the end of the day, they'll look fantastic in the French league. The next level or a massive step up in leveling class is the Champions League. And even if you're Barcelona with Messi and Suarez and Neymar, you can't beat Juventus. What makes anyone think PSG are going to beat them? You know, and not so much Juventus, but better teams. I'd still put money on Barcelona smashing PSG to pieces if they got each other.
Well, things put this way, you look at their team, you've got Verratti, you've got Cavani, you've got
Di Maria.
Rabiot. Yeah, and the right winger, the Brazilian one.
Lucas Moura. He's going to Monaco on the deal with Mbappe.
So here you go. Yeah. And then they're talking about all these great players. And then one of their best central midfielders, Matuidi, has gone to Juventus.
That's right.
So
it's just for a bargain fee as well.
Yeah.
There you go.
And they still play Thiago Motta in there as well.
Right. Well, look, speaking of Juventus, themselves, Napoli, and both Milanese. That's the bloody pasta with the chicken, isn't it? Milanese clubs each bagged 3 goals over the weekend. Will this be the most exciting Serie A season in a long time?
I think so.
Yeah,
I think so. I think the Italian league's been good for the last 2 years. To be honest, I think it's been more entertaining, good to watch. We all know about AC Milan and the players that they're buying. So, you know, they're after Marchisio as well from Juventus. So if they manage to get him as well,
cracking player.
You know, they've got Bonucci and they're building something there in Milan slowly. I fancy Milan this year for some reason. I don't know if they're ready yet or not. I don't know. I'm going for Milan this year. AC Milan.
They're signing the fella from Fiorentina as well, aren't they?
Bernardeschi.
Yeah, Bernardeschi. The striker. He's with K.
Kalinic.
There you go. See? I do my research sometimes.
Good man.
There you go. So, hey, right. Listen, gents, on a final note, in terms of our news, Lukas Podolski is considering legal action against a right-wing website, Bribed Bart, who posted an image of him on a jet ski with a headline, Spanish police crack gang moving migrants on jet skis. The post has since been pulled from the site and a grovelling apology has been issued to Podolski. So, let me get this straight. He's gone from winning the World Cup with Germany to playing for Galatasaray to being a social media hero, being a rapper, and he's been accused of being a migrant smuggler on a jet ski. Well, sorry for the guy, but he's playing in the A1 league at the moment. You know, he's living a happy life, eating sushi. I don't know, but he's on a jet ski and being accused of. Anyway, right, gents, let's do one more thing before we go, and it's a quiz because Rodri loves quizzes, don't you? Right, I have picked 3 games from the 2009-2010 season. Okay, they are corresponding fixtures of 3 games from this weekend. So there's Man City versus Everton, there's Stoke versus Arsenal, and there's Spurs versus Chelsea. Yeah, so I'm gonna say Stoke versus Arsenal. They played each other on the 27th of February. Does anyone hazard a guess what the score was? And the goal scorers.
What year?
It was season 2009-2010, but it was actually 27th of February 2010.
Blimey, you're testing me now.
2-1 Stoke.
2-1 Stoke, you're saying?
I'd say 2-1 Stoke, yeah.
Rod?
1-0 Stoke.
1-0 Stoke. Okay, I'll get back to you guys in a bit for that one. Right, the next game is...
So I'll change that. 3-1 Stoke.
3-1 Stoke. Okay, cool. Right, the next game is 17th of April 2010. Spurs play Chelsea at White Hart Lane. Obviously not Wembley.
2010?
Anyone want to guess?
Let's do what Chelsea.
Say with his thinking cap on. Or thinking hat. Thinking woolly hat.
I'll go 4-1 Chelsea.
4-1 Chelsea. Rod?
4-2 Chelsea.
Was that the 4-4?
Is that your answer? You're asking me.
No, I'm asking you. I'm going to go 4-4.
4-4. Okay, right. Next game is Man City 0, Everton 2. Oh, why did I even give you guys the answer? Who scored in that game? Man City 0, Everton 2.
In 2009.
Yeah, 2010. There you go. I even gave you the score. Give me the scorers then.
Who's what was the score?
2-0 Everton at the Etihad or the Empty Had.
Empty Had.
In 2010.
Yeah, it was 2-0 Everton.
Fellaini.
Go on.
Fellaini, did he score?
No.
Leon Osman.
No. You want to guess?
I'm trying to think.
Was he a striker?
Mikel Arteta. No, he was probably.
Arteta's one. There you go. So it was a 1.4 lead. Come on.
Leighton Baines.
No. Okay. I'm going to give you the results of the other games. Yeah, and I want you to guess the scorers. At least that might make it a bit more interesting, yeah?
Mm.
Okay. 27th of February 2010, Stoke 1, Arsenal 3.
Oh, wow. It must have been the last time we beat them there before last season.
Could be. I think you're right, actually.
Phil Walker?
Not Walker, no.
Arshavin?
Nope.
Thierry Henry?
Mm-mm.
Bentner's
one, yeah.
Shout. I should know this, shouldn't I? This is embarrassing.
Fabregas?
Yes, Fabregas is one, yeah.
Corn? I'm on a hat-trick, yeah.
Rizicky?
No. Rod, guess the Stoke one.
Oh. Give me a clue. Stoke, is he centre-forward, midfielder?
I'm pretty sure he was a midfielder. He used to play for United back in the day. I think he was in the youth academy. Had a stint at Leeds as well, if I'm not mistaken. Was that?
Played for Leeds as well.
I think he played for Leeds as well. I think he had the spell at Leeds. I think.
Oh.
Danny Pugh.
There you go. Danny Pugh.
Great guess.
I wasn't guessing.
Right, you can stop playing.
I'm out.
You can stop playing now. No. Right. Do you want to guess? Shall I have one more guess for the Arsenal's goal scorer?
I'm just trying to think of players that could have possibly been playing. Johan Giroud.
He was a defender.
Johan Giroud. Vermaelen.
No. Vermaelen. Yeah. There you go. Vermaelen. Right. Okay. I'll give you the Spurs Chelsea one. It was 2-1 to Spurs. Who scored for Spurs? Don't say anything because you've got your hat trick. Shut up.
2-1 to Spurs. You said.
Yeah.
Wow, we'll bang off with that, wouldn't we? Jesus.
Okay.
Robbie Keane?
Nope. Come on, Rod.
Jermaine Defoe?
Yes.
Gareth Bale?
Yes. He's pulled level with Lee. Who's going to get the Chelsea goal?
The Chelsea goal, 2010.
Drogba?
Nope.
Lampard.
Lampard.
Who said Lampard first?
I'm out with this.
Well, it was Lampard. I'm going to give it to both of you. So you've all got three. So, see, everyone's a winner. This is in the United States. You're not going to get medals for losing, but here you go.
I didn't participate.
You didn't participate because I banned you.
Fair enough.
Because you got Danny Pugh. I don't know how you're ill.
He was looking over your shoulder. That's what it was.
He actually took him. Angle. I think on a bloody angle. Well, guys, look, thank you very much for your time. Thank you for everyone contributing in the live chat. Thank you to you and for sitting on the pillow.
Thank you. Making me taller.
Yeah, there you go. Rod, do you want to give everyone your Twitter handle?
Yeah, it's Rod James Giggs.
Excellent. Lee, I'd ask for you to give yours, but everyone's tuned in for you, so obviously know who you are, but do it anyway.
Lee Gunner 82.
And you have a YouTube channel as well, yeah?
Yeah, all one word, Gunner Bang. Gunner. Excellent. As in Arsenal Gunners.
Excellent. And you?
Yannickus J.
Excellent. Wonderful. See, I'm not going to ask you to spell it. Right, we have a Facebook group page. We have a Facebook like page. So do whatever you want with those ones. And we also have a Twitter page at Shoot the Defence. And that is pretty much it for this week. Thank you guys again for your time. Thanks to all our sponsors, Sofa Sports News, Save Association, My Sportswear, Youth Energy, Blackback, Lucky Seven Management. We have loads of partners and they're all great and lovely and fluffy and wonderful. So we'll be back this time next week.
Thanks again, mate. Appreciate it.